This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information.
Hey everybody, we are back. This is Behind the Video number 67, and my lovely and talented co-host Tim Street is on location on a secret project, which I'm sure we'll hear more about soon. The last time I checked on Twitter, he was in Times Square in New York City doing something, so we'll have to keep an eye on and see where Tim is going. I can't even talk this early in the morning. But joining me even earlier in the morning is Dane Golden, who's going to fill in for Tim this week. Dane is heralding from San Francisco, Dane.
San Francisco today.
So what's new in your life these days?
Well, I would actually, instead of lovely and talented, I want to be called grumpy and gravelly.
All right, so you're going to be our grumpy and gravelly co-host today. So,
yeah, just continuing to do YouTube audience growth consulting, helping companies, brands, entertainment properties, and nonprofits grow their YouTube audience.
And there's a lot of growth potential there too, isn't there?
I believe that YouTube, as much as it is used, is both the most compelling and the most underutilized social media platform.
Well, that's interesting. And how so? Is it just that there's not a lot of brands appealing to older generations using it, or is it more than that?
I think the pain is that there is not enough engagement. And we will talk today about a number of what I would call engagement tools, where YouTube is becoming more of an engagement platform and less of a broadcast platform.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we're going to look into that. And actually, that's a good segue to our topic of the week this week. So it's just Dane and me today. So we decided we're going to take a look at some of the changes that have been happening on YouTube. Now, changes are constant on YouTube, but we found about four things here, Dane, that are of interest. So I guess we'll kind of step through them, and we'll go with the least interesting to the most interesting, right? Or sort of. Actually, maybe not, because there's actually a really interesting one at number two here. But let's take a look first at number one on our list, which is the stock music library. And this popped up the other day when I was on my channel. And let me just pull it up here real quick. So we've had this issue as YouTube creators. When we use stock music, we often get dinged for copyright violations or insinuated copyright violations. And what YouTube has done, this must be just in the last week, is they now have buy out music, essentially royalty-free music that you can use for your videos. And there's about, 150 tracks, Dane?
There's exactly 150. 100 were launched just a few weeks ago at VidCon, and there's another 50. And they're sort of all-purpose tracks, background music beds that you can use in a lot of different purposes, like there's one that works well for weddings, etc.
And you can download these too, which is nice. So you don't have to. This is not one of those things where you had to go run it through, after the fact and edit on YouTube. You can now download these tracks and put them into Final Cut or whatever you're using to edit and work with them, which is kind of nice. And I'm hoping they add more, because I think we're going to see there's a lot of repetitive background music, right? Right, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have a limited library like that comes with some sort of video editing studio, you hear the same things a lot, because there's some favorites. But I think that you'll see more, and I think that people will start wanting to be a part of this and say, I'm in the library, and composers will want to do that.
It's right, because it's a great way to get some of your work out, maybe sell some tracks to people that want more. And what is cool is, because that was my big concern, was how am I going to pick something that everybody's using? And what they've done is they've added a popularity graph to here, so you can see which ones are being used more. So, you might want to choose something other than Moth, because it's really popular and it might be in a lot of other videos, right? So so they've done a nice job kind of doing that. And you know what's funny, too, is that I've been getting, every once in a while, I get one of these scammy invites to some, multi-channel network. And I'm not talking, the big guys. I'm talking, these little guys.
I would love to forward me some of those sometime.
I will, yeah. I'll dig through and find one. And what's funny is there was one in particular. I'm not going to – I forgot the name of it off the top of my head, but there's one in particular that their big thing that they're going to offer you in exchange for giving up 10 or 15% of your revenue or 20% or whatever they take is that they're going to give you access to a royalty-free music library. So this
Woo-hoo!
Kind of
a Royalty free.
You can go to town on it. And what's interesting is that when I started looking around, like doing a YouTube search on these guys, a lot of people were like joining them, excited about this. Well, now you know, it looks like you can get access to this. Dane, are these creation tools going to be something for everyone on YouTube, or are just people of certain viewership levels or subscriber levels?
I believe that this particular tool is free to all.
Oh, that's great. So that's a good thing. And you can see this now. If you go into your YouTube channel library here, it'll be under Creation Tools on your channel. I think, where am I at? I'm in my channel settings spot right now. So you'll find it in there. You can click the download link, and you are good to go. So that is that's a nice change. I think that's a really good thing because, you know, it's not as bad as it used to be, but I use a lot of stock music, and I own a lot of stock music. I bought... Mm-hmm. Back when I had a cable access show in 1998, I bought a library from a local company.
And for how much?
Actually, this was pretty cheap. It was about, like, I think $180.
Okay.
And it was four CDs, and they were all, like, very short tracks, but it was fine for what I was doing with it. And I still use those tracks to this day. So, but occasionally what will happen is, not so much with them, but there's another company called Footage Firm. Have you ever seen their stuff?
No. What I used way back when, I started doing web videos, believe it or not, on my own in 2000, and I used something called, it was the precursor to Vegas Video. I can't remember what it was called, but I think it was called an acid track or something like that
okay.
that I bought.
Yep.
So yeah, I totally am familiar with this type of thing, and I think it's important to have tracks, but this is a nice, really nice feature.
And the nice thing is that you're not going to get dinged for it, because what happened with me was I had, so that first library I had, it didn't have too many problems with it because I bought the music from the source. What's been happening is a lot of people have been, a lot of artists sell their music tracks to multiple stock music providers. And I was using one called Footage Firm, and their gig, I don't know how they make money doing this, but they will basically give you the music for free in exchange for shipping costs. And maybe they make a little bit off the shipping, but I ordered like, I think 10 or 12 DVDs full of stock music, so really actually some pretty good stuff. All in for like $90, and I ended up getting, you know, several hundred tracks, which is great, all different genres and everything else. The problem is that although Footage Firm, you know, had the license and gave me the ability to use the stuff in my YouTube channels, those same artists had licensed their tracks to other providers who were in the Content ID system, and I had a lot of back and forth with YouTube trying to clear a lot of videos.
It's so confusing managing the right system. I actually met this engineer, YouTube engineer, at, this is going to blow your mind. Okay.
I'm ready. So blow my mind.
Okay, I met this YouTube engineer at VidCon, and he was a really cool guy. And what he told me his job was, you know, you have to manage the rights. So they find out so you're using rights of somebody's music or video or whatever. They have to attribute your ad revenue to that creator.
Right.
We know that, right?
Right, exactly.
What happens if you use music from this and movie a clip from here?
Yeah.
So he's in charge of actually figuring out a way to allocate what percentage goes to which person you're infringing the rights of.
Oh, my gosh. And so they actually do that. They divvy it up.
That's what he does.
Wow.
He's the engineer that does that.
So it's funny. It's a job creator, despite all the aggravation that it brings. So there you go. So that's the stock music library. Number two, and this is a big one, actually. This is commenting changes. And YouTube has long been known as a source of trolling because for a long time it was so easy to be anonymous there. And they switched to this real name system, but that didn't seem to alleviate it all. And now we're seeing kind of a merger with Google Plus, Dane, right? So what's up with that?
Well, it's the Google Plus is here, and it's not going away, and it's going to be inviting in a lot of things, and there's so many different features. I personally was resistant initially to Google Plus because I felt that they were stuffing it down my throat, but because of the advantages to identity, there's really only one other identity social media, and that is Facebook. You can pretty much guarantee if somebody has an identity there, that's their true identity. There's no other social media like that. And Google Plus is saying, well, in order to give better conversation, which is what YouTube is really about, it's not a broadcast media, it's a conversation media, it's an engagement media. We need identity because there are trolls. There's too many trolls, and there's really nothing we can do about it without verifying identity. So one day, Lon, your daughter will say to you, Daddy, you fought in the troll wars?
It's going to be a long remembered time, right? Of the
because now with this new comment section, you can it will do several things. It promote it'll give higher priority to people who have Google Plus identities. You as the content creator. It also and as far as conversation, it adds on the front of excuse me. It adds to threaded conversations. So there's all these things that are going on that will integrate Google Plus, and I feel that the biggest change over the next year or two will be understanding how Google Plus works with YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the big thing, right? Because Google well, YouTube is really probably as popular, if not more popular, than Facebook, right? And Google Plus has been kind of lagging behind in popularity, and this might be a great way to kind of merge things and make it work. And that's been the long rumored thing that the two will merge, right?
Well, they have merged. And watch what happens as Google Plus starts to skew much, much younger than it has.
Mm.
And the folks that are on YouTube, which is the second, after Facebook, the second biggest social network, they will start to build their Google Plus identities, and the number of spam comments will start to go down because it's verified to an identity. I wanted to touch on just one other thing that we may have touched on in the show, or you may have touched on a few weeks ago, is the top fans feature.
Right. Now, I don't have access to that. We did a little bit, and I don't have access to that yet because I think I'm at like 1,600, so I need to get to, what, 5,000 to get that to work?
That's right, 5,000. And so that integrates your YouTube followers with Google+, and then you can message them independently just like you can from this comments area, which is available to people with less than 5,000. And I wanted to add one other thing that I forgot to add. If you are somebody who's managing a content stream for a third party, make sure that they hook that up to a Google Plus account as soon as possible if they have not. Because what's happening now is they're really jamming this down your throat. And one of the people who are managers of an account and not you, they can accidentally hook a YouTube account to their personal YouTube Plus Google Plus page, and it will be there permanently.
Ooh, so you gotta really make sure you do this right.
You want to do it right. You have a window of time of 14 days to switch it if it's hooked to a personal profile page inadvertently.
Okay, so there's an open enrollment period.
That's right.
So it's like signing up for your health insurance or something, right?
Right, but make sure you can do this.
Now, they've done some prep work here, so let's take a look real quick. So if you go into your channel settings under community, there's comment settings, and apparently already you can start linking certain circles in your Google Plus profile. You can start linking or banning users and set up a blacklist of certain words that you don't wish to appear within your channel without them being approved first. So we're starting to see a little bit already starting with this, and I think that will certainly continue. So, if you're someone who gets a lot of trolling spammers, or you're someone that really just wants to encourage people to, I guess this actually could be something interesting, Dane. You could almost create a circle of trust of people that just people that you circle can comment on your videos, and you can do that right now. And that's kind of a neat thing if you really have a big problem with people spamming your channel. So. That's going to be neat, and I think the Google Plus as a commenting platform is better, really, than YouTube's is already. So we'll have to see how that develops. I will say on commenting, I do a lot of gadget reviews. That's where I make most of my money on YouTube. And I took your advice too, which is to really make sure you heavily engage people. I've been surprised that you know, the more I engage with my audience, the less trolling I see. I mean, it's very rare, knock on wood. I say that now, we'll see them all come in and troll me. But
yeah.
I get far less trolling spam now than I did initially. And it's been interesting because people are asking really good questions. I mean, I've never, you know, I've been doing web stuff for a long time. Yeah, and I've never seen, like, I've never seen commenting more productive than I have within my YouTube stuff. And it's been really nice because people are asking questions about the stuff I'm reviewing. Maybe they, maybe I didn't cover something. And I've actually made a few videos now in response to comments that have been made.
Because that's fantastic.
So it's been really good. And I don't get a lot of trolls. And when I do, I'll pop them off, you know. But it hasn't been that bad. I've been surprised.
Those reply videos are huge because it builds engagement. You're talking one-to-one to your audience, your most engaged people. They see it, they come back, they say, wow, he's really talking to me. They become loyal, they comment more, and it is a virtuous circle. That's really great.
It is, because you know what, it's, you know, certainly video has always been a one-way conversation to some degree, but you know, you're adding now the ability to very quickly, because you can so quickly make another video, to be able to respond back to people in a way that also benefits other viewers, you know. So as an example, I had reviewed the Ouya game console, which is that open source Kickstarter game console that happened, and somebody was having trouble getting something I had demonstrated to work. So he's like, I'd be your best friend if you can show me how to make this happen. And it found out there was a lot of other people who were having the same problem too. So to make another video for him and for others, it was really kind of a productive way to keep continuing that conversation. And it gave me another thing to post that week. So that was really that was really cool. So here's another thing that's coming up, Dane. This is offline viewing. So you know, we're often traveling on airplanes, and you can't always get a good stream on an airplane. The fact that you can get a stream at all is pretty amazing on an airplane, at least from, you know, for people our age. But you now can, at least in the coming weeks, will be able to download your favorite channels, if they allow you to do this. You'll be able to download those onto your mobile device and watch offline, and then when you go back online, it'll sync those videos up. So what's this about?
Yeah, I don't think.
Or did I just describe it all?
I think you described it all. I don't think we've seen any screenshots yet, but this is going to be on the iOS platform. So it's in the app itself. You'll be able to download up to 48 hours. Your views and ads do get counted. They just get counted 48 hours delayed.
Oh, I see. So right. So when they get back, it'll delete the video off their device and then sync it up. And I guess as a partner, you have the option to decide whether or not you want to allow YouTube to do this. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to do it, but you know, I found that YouTube tends to sometimes be like a community that never likes anything changing in it. So people often just don't like change. But you can shut off individual videos, or you can completely shut off your whole channel from it, or you can just allow it. I guess the default position is that they're going to have it on by default. So if you don't want your channel downloaded, you can just tell them not to do that, and I guess an option will appear. I would imagine this is going to be DRM'd, so I don't think it's going to be very easy for people to pull your video out and pirate it, at least not any more difficult than they could.
Well, it's already easy if you are on Firefox and you're using the tool that I use.
Not for piracy purposes, of course, right?
I use it. What do I use it for? Oh, sometimes I just like the audio of a trailer or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just want to hear it in my playlist, and you can't buy the audio of a trailer.
Right.
So right, I'll download. So. There's some tools to rip things right off. I mean, if you want to rip something, you can rip it.
Right. But, no, it's not hard to do.
But Download Helper, maybe it's called. Anyway, here's what I think about this offline viewing. Now, I'm a huge podcast listener. Now, I wish it was available in iTunes, and it's not. Hmm. The thing is that I listen to a lot of video podcasts as audio because I'm driving a lot, I'm walking a lot. I like to do that, but I'm not going to watch video as I'm driving.
Right.
So this is for commuters or people who are just out in the world. And lately, you know, over time, rather, they've been dividing content into lean back and lean forward. But I feel that there are actually four different types of content absorption. So there's lean back, lean forward, curl up, which is in bed or on the couch or whatever. That's Jason Calacanis's quote.
Yep.
Mine is on the move, And that is audio podcasts. When people listen to shows like this one or others in audio form, you're on there at the gym, you're walking, you're driving. This YouTube sort of goes in both areas. You may be mobile in a vehicle or commuting in some way. You're just listening to the video podcast. You can do that through your stereo or whatever. Or you may just be around the house and wanting to do it. You may be in a low bandwidth area. There's any number of purposes that this could be for.
And it's great for parents who have kids that are watching a lot of stuff over that LTE connection on the phone and racking up the data charges. You can have them downloaded at home before they head out the door and be able to watch it. You know, it's funny with this show, it's interesting. So the video is, our number of video viewers is higher amongst those who are watching it live.
Yeah.
So for video for this show, because it's long form, and you know it tends to just be talking heads, so there's not much to really look at. depends on who we have on, I guess. But there's not a lot to look at. So this show tends to be a live watch, and we get about half our views that way. And then the other half come from audio. So I actually, when I go and edit the show every week, before I re-upload the final version, so what I do is I download through the control panel, I download the Hangout video, edit it, and then re-upload it. At the same time, I grab the audio feed off of that Final Cut project and bang that out as an MP3 and put it onto the podcast feed. So you know, people like to download the audio version, but it would certainly be a lot more convenient if they could just grab it from YouTube and play it in the background. That'd be kind of cool. So we'll have to see how this develops, and I'm excited about it. I think it's a good thing.
Before we continue, I'm just saying, as far if you do audio podcast, video podcast, and live, when we were at Twit, we had about 80% of our downloads were audio, 20% were video, and about 0.5% were live. But the live people, of course, were the most engaged. They were the ones that were, you know, getting the most click-throughs on the ads and things like that. So it happened in the moment.
Right.
But then, and it was unclear, you know, how many people were duplicate downloading both.
Right, that's right. Or somebody, because I've done this with the Twitch stream before, like Sunday night I often watch part of it at, you know, as it's live. Cause a lot of times I tune in kind of in the middle, and then I will download the podcast, listen to the first, you know, the first half hour, 45 minutes that I missed, right? So, it's hard, you know, it's hard too, because, you know, I'm trying to like aggregate all the listeners and all the viewers, and, you know, PodTrack is great for tracking those MP3 downloads,
right.
But I can't track it on, you know, I have to go in and add in the YouTube stuff from that. So
yeah.
The nice thing is I think Stitcher is now, because I guess Stitcher used to download it once and then they would, you know, rebroadcast it from
within
their server.
That's why I was anti-Stitcher for very long, because we couldn't get the numbers properly from them.
Right, so it's another thing to add. And I guess now they've changed it, so now my PodTrack numbers are accurate for both platforms, you know, both whatever PodTracker they're using in Stitcher. So that's been pretty handy. So now the next thing we were going to talk about here, this is the last big thing that you found this one, Dane. This is the YouTube Creator Academy. So this is like a full-blown course. And I guess there's an assessment involved too, so you're gonna get quizzed at the end of it. So this is launching on the 30th, which is when? When is the 30th? That is next month, tomorrow. So starting tomorrow, you're gonna have lessons, and what's nice about this is not like, you know, a beginner kind of thing. I think it's geared towards people that kind of know what they're doing, who want to step up their game, and that's actually the topic of the first lesson. It's called Step Up Your Game. It's going to consist of you know, tracking subscribers and watch time, how to go through your analytics. They'll give you an assessment at the end of that. The second, and I won't go through all of them, but the second lesson will be what makes your channel tick, benefits of how to design your channel, what goes on under the hood. You're going to learn about branding yourself. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in here, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty helpful thing. You've got to sign up for it, so it's not something you're just going to stumble across. They're looking to have you sign up your channel, and they also want to learn a little bit about you, so I'm guessing there's going to be some engagement so they can try to, you know, geared more of these educational videos and assessments to what you're doing. So, Dane, this is a new thing that YouTube's doing, right? I mean, what do you think is going to be helpful for some folks?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's the thing that's called being YouTube verified, which is sort of a big buzzword these days. There's only a few organizations that have that. And that the Creator Academy is a spinoff that originally all started with the Next New Networks acquisition a few years ago. And all this stuff is about engaging and helping content creators partners just do what they're doing better. And while there's a lot of info, great info that comes from independent channels like Tim Schmoyer of Real SEO and Real SEO, and then also Vidi SEO, which is Matt Ballack, and others, this is, you know, it's coming from the mothership, and that always carries a lot of validity and is, you know, they have some insider tips that just no one else is going to have.
Right, and it's good stuff to really start building what you're doing because, I found that a lot of folks, especially the people that I help locally here, is that they never look at their analytics. They keep doing things that don't get them where they need to go. And a lot of times the stuff that they're not even, and here's a great example, like the whole gadget thing that I do, I started doing more of it because when I started, you know, I go through my analytics, I used to go through them like every couple of weeks, you know, I wasn't really spending all that much time on YouTube, and at least for my own stuff. And when I went through my analytics one day, I noticed that all of a sudden, like the stuff that I was reviewing with my iPhone, you know, just like hard drives and some other junk, was getting a ton of views. I'm like, that's bizarre. So I said, let me try this again. And then I hooked the switcher up. And then I started doing a little bit more with it. And before I know it, I'm building subscribers and my channel's really starting to grow because I focused on, you know, what people were looking for because, you know, anyone can make video. And you're really in a sea of a lot of other content and you've really got to differentiate yourself. And I think when you look at your analytics and how you're doing things and where views are dropping off, you can really start to build an audience around something that you're providing that others aren't. And that's a really, kind of important thing to start looking at, right?
Absolutely. So, and later on, we're going to give I'm going to tease it right now. We're going to give my top secret golden engagement quotient. You can compare your channel and your video to any other video on YouTube.
And he's got a formula. There's like math involved with this thing. So it's not algebra, but you can do it at home too. So it should be pretty good. So now we'll move on now to our news of the week, Dane. And you know our YouTube charts. The YouTube charts haven't been updated in like 2.5 weeks, and we usually go off the Tube Filter top 50 channels thing, and that wasn't updated either. So we've got. Don't have a lot of charts to talk about this week, but we are going to talk about some news, and that is Maker Studios is assisting advertisers now with their Maker Made service, and they've been really very aggressively trying to find other revenue models that go beyond just video views. So what's this about?
Well, it's a little bit lean right now on the info, but apparently they are going to be making their affiliate members available for production of promotion, sort of essentially web commercials, you know? Mm-hmm. So you can have Shay Carl promote your product.
Okay, so it's kind
of
like
a... You can have PewDiePie promote your game. I don't really know what it is, but it appears to be that's what this is all about, because they have some great production studios over there, and they have some very followed artists
and very talented people that know how to make really engaging videos too, right?
That's right. That's exactly
So that's kind of a neat thing. So we'll keep an eye on what Maker Studios is doing. And they also, as you know, just bought Blip.tv too. So they have some additional platforms that they own as well. And I think they're really, of the multi-channel networks, I think they're the ones that have been really the most upfront in trying to get around just the revenue component of the viewership revenue component, the finding, you know, some other things. And that's it's going to be neat to watch that. Next item is Netflix is doing what steam-powered printing did to books, according to QZ.com. And, I think it's just another point. We talk about Netflix a lot. This is Quartz.com, but it's a really great website. And they have a pretty nice 20-minute discussion here about what Netflix is doing. And I think, you know, when you look at tonight, this is the night of the Breaking Bad series finale. And a lot of those viewers came in after Breaking Bad first came on the air, right? That they've, you know, that binge viewing thing is really driven it along. And I've had to stop talking to friends about Breaking Bad because a lot of them are not as far along in the series as I am. So it's been a rather difficult thing to have those television show conversations. But it's changing television, too, because remember, TV shows, you never used to have these story arcs that would follow along. Or if you did, there was, you know, maybe one or two episodes that would continue that story, but the other 20 episodes wouldn't, right? It would just be a kind of a standalone thing. And I was looking back at, I was a kid, as most geeks are, I was a big fan of Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine, and all these shows. And if you watch them on Netflix now, they're really, you know, there's so many of these stories are encased in these one-hour episode slots. They're standalone, and so many are. And if you look at television now, remember Twin Peaks, which came out in the 80s, was like one of the first to have like this thing where if you missed like the fifth or the first episode, you had no idea what you were watching on the fifth. And that was a very rare thing, and now it's very common, mainly because it's so easy to go back and watch the reruns. So I'm very intrigued with how Netflix is changing our habits, and I'm also enjoying a lot of their homemade productions there too, which are really, really well done. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine actually works on one of them, and it's interesting on the production side to hear. You know, it's not all that different for people working in the business because it's another client that's making content. But it's very interesting to see how very different that content is being distributed once it is produced. So kind of neat. Are you a Netflix subscriber, Dane?
Yeah, I am. And I watched House of Cards the first weekend it was out, and I watched Arrested Development the first week it was out. And, you know, I'll binge from time to time on shows, but I still, as I said on a previous show, still not on board with the releasing all the episodes at once.
No, and I know, because we had you and Tim had a debate over this before, that you were not big fans of this. So what's the scoop there?
I just feel that if you're talking about engagement, you are blowing off all the people that want to chit-chat about something, because that's one thing about TV. It can be social because it comes out episodically, whereas, you know, Reed is talking in this video about, you know, it's really just like when Charles Dickens released a book in episodes. We're just putting it together in one novel, just like happened at that time. But I'm okay with it, people binging. I think that that's great. That's what people want to do. But even if you space them out or one day at a time, you know, a few days at a time, I think that that would build buzz better.
Right, and you could, and I could have conversations with my friends about what we're watching, right? Because it takes so long to get through some of this stuff.
Or at least you'd be justified on releasing something. Hey, listen, it's been out for 2 weeks. You haven't watched it, and I've spoiled something. That's your fault, not mine.
And why do you think Netflix doesn't have an engagement platform either? There's really no, I mean, they have a review section where you can write a review or something, but there's really no way to engage with other people or the creators of the show. I mean, there's other... Are they missing an opportunity by not putting those tools into their apps and into their website? Because really, the only place to watch Netflix is through a Netflix-approved app. So, you know, is there a reason they're not doing this?
Well, I think that's a very good point. And they definitely come from a distribution angle. And if you think about how they're doing Arrested Development, they're thinking of them as file units. They're like, well, the file is created. Let's just push it out there. But it's not a file.
Right. yeah.
But what they do is they have all this internal engagement metrics. They know if you've watched these videos 10 seconds, 15 seconds, if you skipped ahead. So they have metrics, but they're not really giving... The only tools that they really give you is that give you the tool to rate and rank.
Right. And that's just really to make more recommendations for you personally, right, to find other things to watch.
And now you can also share accounts with family or friends or something like that. But it's really the only engagement you get. But, you know, they're doing fine, so why should I tell them they're doing it wrong? And I think they are driving subscribers, which is really their metric.
Right. And people are paying them to be subscribers too, unlike a YouTube model where it's more like free television. So,
but it's more expensive if you have to pay, like just like a movie, and have billboards everywhere to launch every single show. That's extremely expensive, and that's where movies lose a lot of money, is in that promotion. But instead, have your fans promote it.
And let's look at the movies, Dane, because we've got our top five here. So a lot of new films on the horizon here, and I guess Hollywood continues to just not be doing too well on the money front, especially this time of year. Number five is Don John, $8.9 million this weekend. It was its first week opening up. I haven't looked that movie up, so I have no idea what that one's about.
I can't wait to see this one. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He directed and starred in this movie. Scarlett Johansson. It's about a couple. The guy has a porn addiction, and the woman has a... as a romantic comedy addiction, and it's the plays on the reality or fiction of what we engage in our world.
Oh wow! So this has got, it's like a little media commentary on this one. So that's good.
Big time.
check that one out. So that's number five, and it looked like it did okay for an opening weekend here. Baggage Claim is number four with $9.7 million this weekend. It's also in its first week. Prisoners, $10.5 million weekend. It's made $38.5 million so far. Rush, which is that new Ron Howard film, right, about F1, Formula One racing, $11 million in its first week, which I think is kind of a disappointment. This was a pretty hyped-up film, and I know a lot of people that are really excited to see this, so maybe they're just getting caught up with the fall. And number one, and I guess this one is no surprise, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, because, hey, if you make money on number one, you may as well make a second one, $35 million for the first week. And I'm sure there's a lot of parents who have some kids who went back to school who they're eager to give them a little break from homework and stuff. So that was $35 million there. And, you know, using social media to promote your film is nothing new, but Jim Carrey and his co-star Jeff Daniels, Dumb and Dumber, is in production, and they've been tweeting out some pictures of them behind the scenes in costume. So the fans that were looking forward to that are seeing that. I also saw a Reddit post where some kid stumbled upon them shooting, and they took some pictures with the kid, and they put them up on Reddit there, too. So that's kind of cool.
That's great.
Yeah, and we're seeing more of this, right? There's, like, you know, it's a little bit more real to people to have, you know, these smartphones taking pictures in places that we've, you know, seen them taking pictures in, but now we're starting to see some real film promotion about this. That's not an accident, Dane, right? I mean, they're doing this to promote the film, right?
Oh no, this is great. They're really engaging, and there's other things that they could do. Jim Carrey, call me. We'll talk about your YouTube channel.
Did he call you?
No, he should.
Oh, okay, he should.
I know he listens to this show.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of the many people, right?
I'm addressing him now.
Good. So he will give Dane a call, and he'll get some YouTube behind-the-scenes videos going for you. Last story is this: the Emmys were last weekend, and certainly, you know, a lot of online activity around the Emmys, both from brands who were trying to replicate the Oreo success of the Super Bowl blackout, trying to, you know, target messages based on what was happening in real time at the Emmy Awards. And they were really talking about how well the ratings were, right? There were 17.6 million viewers, which, you know, is so low by prior standards of broadcast television, but these days is really high. And part of the reason why they suspect the ratings were what they were was that there was a football game that, I guess, followed it, right? Or was right before it. So
That's right.
Because I remember it started a little bit later because of the football game. So they think that maybe that football audience kind of bled into the Emmy Awards, and that might have helped bring the viewers up. I guess ABC's broadcast of it last year only did 13.3 million. It's a lot harder to get people's attention now, Dane, right?
Well, there's always a screen in your hand to compete with.
Right.
But this just comes back and relevant to me because YouTube has extremely good engagement and audience tracking tools. And when you compare it to Nielsen, it just doesn't compare. I mean, it's so much more helpful to understand YouTube engagement than TV engagement. There's just very, very poor tracking abilities.
And really, and you look at TV engagement, it is strictly views. It is not the golden EQ, which we're going to talk about in a minute, there's no way to track how people talk, which is probably why Twitter has become so popular amongst the broadcast networks, is that it does give them some way to track real-time feedback online, although I don't know if it's as valuable as, you know, someone having a direct interaction with a creator, you know, directly through, you know, those new tools you described and also just through the usual comment platform. So we're going to move into our tips of the week here, and my pick of the week, Dane, before we get to the golden EQ, because, you know, drag it out a little bit longer, as I picked up the iPhone 5S.
And great.
I have to say, the camera on this thing is amazing. They've really been piling a lot of features into these cameras over the last couple of years. And the iPhone 5, I thought, was excellent. The 5S camera is even better. The picture quality is better. Video quality is slightly better. But it also has that 120 frames per second capture mode now, too. So you can get, you know, some really neat, relatively fluid slow motion now, because you can record at 120 frames per second. It does do some playback things where you can kind of let it run at full speed and then have it slow down. But when you export the video, it'll export at the full 120 frames per second. So it, you know, adds some GoPro capabilities, because that was something you could do on a GoPro for a while. But now you can get it on your phone, and it looks really good, I have to say. So I did a review, of course, on my YouTube channel. You can check that out. So, Dane, let's hear this golden EQ. What's the magic formula? Do you want me to zoom into the thing you posted on the show notes here, too?
No, that's all right. Okay. I'll explain it, and we can post it later. It's simply this. I work with a lot of different clients, and you know, their question is really generally very simple. How do I get more views? Everyone talks about views, but I've always believed that it's not views. Views are extremely important, but you have to use view numbers in relationship to engagement numbers. But what are those engagement numbers really, and how do you find them out if you don't have access to a channel to compare their internal numbers? Now, when I do a formal analysis of a channel and I have access to the analytics, I do like a 33-point analysis. Wow. But I found a way to do this in with just three numbers to compare your video to any other video on the web and find out how engaged your video is. I call it the golden engagement quotient. One, because my name is golden, but two, because of the golden mean, and it's a number, it's a ratio.
Right.
So here it is. It's C times 3 plus L plus D over V times 1,000.
Oh, okay. So let's go through those letters.
Yeah. So C is comments.
Okay.
L is likes. D is dislikes. And I rate likes and dislikes the same. It's engagement. It doesn't matter to me if someone likes or dislikes.
Right, because if when you look at that, remember that Rebecca Black Friday video, right?
More dislikes than likes.
Yeah, it was like horrendously disliked, yet it still became immensely popular and generated lawsuits and all the other crazy stuff that it did. But that was, right? There's no such thing as bad publicity, I guess, right?
That's right. Unless you're the governor of New York.
Right.
So anyway, and then V is views. And mm-hmm. and so these are all numbers that are available on any YouTube video you look at. Comments, likes, dislikes, views. So if you have a chart and you use this math and you times that times 1,000, and what I've come up with is that the ideal number is right around 100. That's the golden mean, so to speak. Now, some are higher. Very, very few, like about 1% of YouTube videos you will find are higher. And those are I'll talk about those in a minute. But most are lower. So what happens is, and I did on a couple of your videos, Lon, and mm-hmm. you're getting some engagement, but you can mm-hmm. do better.
Okay.
I did one video, it had a 17.
Okay.
So that needs
to do better, right?
Yeah, but I may not have done the one where you're doing a lot of comments.
Mm-hmm.
But are you engaging in all your videos? Are you asking them to like the video right away, right at the very beginning, verbally or either in a overlay? Whether it's an annotation or right in the video,
and I can say I'm probably not doing that enough, right? Because I'm probably a little too reluctant to ask for that, but maybe I should be asking that more, right?
And how much are you telling them? Hey, please comment within the video, either at the beginning or the end, or both. Also, you can be the first person to comment on your own video. You can say, "Hey, please comment. I'd love to respond."
Right, and that's something I need to do a little bit more with. I have solicited people to ask questions in the comments. I don't do it regularly enough, so I think I need to do a little bit more of that.
Well, if you look like a channel like Jenna Marbles, for instance, mm-hmm. super high engagement, the most highly engaged normal YouTube channels are actually the beauty vlogs.
Right.
So I don't know if you've heard of channels like Michelle Phan or Wendy's Lookbook or It's Judy Time. Young women are commenting about clothing and makeup.
Okay.
So those are very, very high engagement. So we value comments as three times the value of a like. Like's important, but a comment is three times more valuable.
And if somebody's going to spend the time to actually make a comment, like I'm going through Jenna Marbles, one of her recent videos here, pretty amazing. She posted this thing a couple days ago. It gets 1.3 million views on it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking through here. I mean, she's got a ton of engagement. Now, she's not necessarily engaging with all these people, but there's a lot of engagement going on between people.
Yes. Well, they are engaged in the video, and mm-hmm. she's addressing them one-to-one.
Right.
I rank this based on views, because what if you only had a few thousand views, but there was super high engagement? That means to me you need better distribution. Now, I found your guest from a couple of weeks ago, the resident. I looked through her videos. She had 180 was her ranking on the RT channel. 180, which is super high.
Off the chart, right.
Yeah, now it's not the highest, but it's super high. And what that tells me is they are not distributing and promoting her video better. If it's not reaching a good enough audience. People are super engaged, which means that she could extrapolate that number if she put some TrueView dollars behind that, or if they promoted it on their TV channel, or whatever.
And when we say put some TrueView dollars behind it, that would be going out and doing placing some ads on other YouTube videos, right?
That's right. That's right. Or just you can buy search terms in the promote featured in the right rail of the YouTube. It's near the related videos. There's a number of ways to. I don't feel that this is illegitimate at all. I consider it marketing. You pay for views, but you're not actually looking for views. You're looking for subscribers.
Right. So you get people in to watch the video, and then they're going to hit the subscribe button and do that.
That's right. So you want views. The way you get views, number one way of getting views is having more subscribers. Number one way of getting more subscribers is having more engagement. And this is a way of ranking how you do engagement.
And how much does it cost to do, you know, to do that effectively if you were to do a TrueView ad? Because because for a lot of people who are starting out, of course, I think it's probably a really smart thing to do. I mean, it gets you up higher where you need to be seen initially. So, you know, what should you budget for that? If you're, you're not looking to become the next gen of marbles, you're looking to maybe become the expert on the Parrot drone or something like that. Like, what's the budget?
Well, most of the folks I work with are folks with budget who are doing marketing for real brands or entertainment properties or not that a YouTube channel isn't a real entertainment property, but the budget is so slim usually.
Right.
But you can find your niche. For instance, maybe what's that platform that you were talking about, Juan? The I don't know my games.
Oh, the Ouya, the game system, Ouya. Right? The Ouya, right?
Now, I'm betting that there's not a lot of bidding on the Ouya keywords, whether in normal AdWords or YouTube AdWords, which is called TrueView, or on Facebook or on Twitter. And you might find that with, you know, $30-$40 a week, you may find that you get a handful of viewers, but they may be your key viewers, because I'm really not looking for viewers when I advertise. I'm looking for sharers. So I'm not looking to buy just anyone. I'm looking for people who will become my fans. So with a trickle of, I mean, money talks, you know.
But yeah, sure.
But there are, with a few bucks a week, I believe that you can find those small number of keywords, that small narrow audience that is exactly what you want.
And I did that with I brought the Parrot drone. I did that with one of my drone videos because I had this little flight recorder GPS thing before. I just ordered it early enough that I got it before a lot of people did. So I did about $25, not even a lot of money, on TrueView. Boosted. I probably got a couple hundred views out of it, but I saw a significant uptick in subscribers. I got a lot of other drone enthusiasts kind of popping into that video to watch it. And now because that video kind of got early seeded with some of those paid views, it is now one of the top videos on that topic.
It's
a niche thing. You know, it's not a huge, it's not going to be a huge consumer.
But the best channels are niche channels. Like Tim Street says, own your niche.
Right.
How much did you spend on that? Do you remember?
I think I spent probably about $30 on it.
$30 to become the top video.
Right. On that particular, very narrow thing. And now I should say that, when you're doing this as a reviewer, to a brand, there's a lot more value to spending that $30. You know, for me as a reviewer, I never even got close to making back that $30 on that video. But
how many subscribers did you get, do you think?
I'd be hard to say because I don't know how they came to subscribe to me. I should probably look at that analytics a little bit closer and see what video they were on when they hit the subscribe button. But I think I probably got some from that. I'll go through and dig around there a little bit. But I'm pretty sure it helped because this was right when I was trying to get over that 1,000 hump and I was seeing a pretty good uptick. And there were people that were interested in the AR drone and what I would do with it. I'm hoping they're finding some of the other stuff that I do interesting too. I haven't seen too many subscribers fall off because I haven't done a lot with the drone recently. But It was a good investment. I don't think I could do it, given the type of channel I have. I don't think I could do it every week. But I think when I've got something that I know is unique that might help promote my channel better, I think I probably will do it again.
So again, if you just want to know how your channel or your views or a single video is engaging versus other videos of it, you can compare it with the golden engagement quotient. It's comments times views plus likes plus dislikes. Put that all divided by views times 1,000. Ideally, your number is 100. Most people will find themselves where you are, Lon, around between somewhere between 5 and 30.
Okay. So that's not such a bad place to be. I'm just looking through here right now. It looks like I drove on my – let me just go back to all time here not to drag out the clicking here. But it looks like I drove about 22 subscribers from that video alone. And I would imagine that's probably – a lot of those came in the earlier points when I was doing the advertising. So,
mm-hmm. So $1 per helped. Subscriber.
Yeah, probably about $1 per subscriber, which isn't bad. And I think, you know, it would be more valuable if I could directly interact with those subscribers, which I'm sure will come down the road when we see more of this Google Plus integration. So, you can once you hit that threshold there. So, good stuff. Well, Dane, thank you for joining us. We are out of time for Behind the Video this week, but Tim will be back next week, and Dane, of course, will be back on again. He's one of our regulars. He will certainly be enlightening us. Dane, are you going to go to New Media Expo this winter?
No, I'm not, but I will look forward to hearing about it from you.
Yes, I'm going to head out there again. I think I'm doing Tim's going to probably have me do a thing on Hangouts and running a TV studio in your basement or something like that. So, so you can find me out there, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming weeks. Dane, where can people find you? You have one of the best domain names on the internet.
Hey.com, you can find me. Also, just Google Hey, I come up first, or at Dane Golden on every social network.
And that's where you can find Dane. You can find me at lonseidman.com. That's LONSEIDMAN, and it's my Google Plus profile, but it gives you kind of the whole thing of what I've been up to lately. You can also find me on Twitter at LONSEIDMAN. This show is recorded very early in the morning at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, 11:30 a.m. Eastern. You can find us on our Google Plus community at BehindTheVideo.com. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher Internet Radio and wherever other fine podcasts are served from. Generally, we tend to pop up in most of those things. So you can get the audio. You can get us on YouTube. Soon, you can download us any way you want. Just make sure you hit the official link so we can get the view counted. So that'll do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.